Good morning. So I've been here before, and so most of you know by now, I really can't. I tried to do that mic thing, so that's why I'm over here by the microphone. I like to have my hands free, and I don't have to worry about something blocking my head. It's really a joy to be here with you this morning on this less hot and humid day than yesterday, but a wonderful summer day it is nonetheless. Before coming to the Berkshires to work at Gould Farm, I worked for 20 years at a soup kitchen in central New Jersey called Elijah's Promise. Not long after I had started working there, one night at dinner I was hanging out, talking with guests, visiting with the volunteers. It was late fall, after Thanksgiving, but before Christmas. It was cold outside. Winter was just around the corner. I remember that. After the meal was over, a couple of guests who had just finished dinner asked me for a ride home. The first drop was Donna. On and off the streets for years, she had just been released earlier that day from Clinton, now known as Edna Mann Correctional Facility for Women. She had no place to stay. She wanted me to drop her at a friend's house. If the friend was home, she was hopeful she would let her spend the night. It was not a sure thing. The other person who asked for a ride was Diargo, D, as he was called. He had been living on the streets for over 10 years, in and out of garages and basements and parks. He needed a ride home to Buccalo Park, where he was sleeping behind a pavilion. So we loaded up and headed out. I dropped Donna off first. There were no lights on in the friend's house. It was dark. But she suggested that I drop her off anyway, and she would wait to see if her friend came home. She was hoping that she would. After dropping Donna off, we headed over to the park. The park was empty and dark. It was a cold night. I drove in along the winding road to the large pavilion. Dee got out and thanked me for the ride home and walked off into the dark and disappeared into the pavilion. I sat there for a few minutes, actually, with my headlights shining into the night. As I sat there, I had one of those aha moments. You know, when a light bulb goes off in your head, I had just driven two homeless people home to a doorstep and a park, as if it was a totally normal thing to do. Doing a favor for a friend, a gesture of kindness on a cold night. I had no anger or outrage that people are homeless. I had no sadness for their suffering, no fear for their safety. I was numb. This was normal. That night, that dark night, a light went on for me. I could never again allow myself to become numbed to the harsh realities of injustice. I could not take the work or the people that I served for granted, or allow my moral compass to be swallowed up in good intentions. If I was driving a woman who was homeless home to a darkened doorstep, and a man home to a park where he was going to sleep outdoors on a cold night, then my work was in vain. At that moment, I was filled with a renewed understanding and sense of purpose. It was one of those powerful moments in my life when seemingly God broke into the routine and spoke a loud and clear voice that touched me in a way that I couldn't help but be changed. A time like this is called kairos in Greek. Kairos time is full time, vital time, crucial time, decisive time, God's time. Kairos moments are those powerful, extra special moments that are packed with meaning. While chronos is tick-tock time, kairos is when time seemingly stands still. It's an aha experience. Theologians call it that moment of revelation or epiphany. Kairos is a key word in the New Testament. When Jesus started his ministry, he came into Galilee preaching and saying, "The time is fulfilled. The kingdom is at hand. Repent and believe in the gospel." And the word for time there in Matthew that we read this morning was not chronos, it was kairos. It was crucial time, decisive time, God's time. Jesus' life was packed with kairos moments, right? Think of all of those moments in our biblical memories from Sunday school classes. Zacchaeus, he saw him in that sycamore tree, they connected, and it was kairos moment. Blind Bartimaeus, nobody else was paying attention to him, but Jesus heard his cries and connected with him. It was a kairos moment. The hemorrhaging woman who came up behind Jesus and touched his robe, and he connected with her. It was a kairos moment. Jesus had so many of those moments. We read one this morning. Matthew writes, the kairos is fulfilled. The time is fulfilled. And what did Jesus do right at that moment, that kairos moment? He called his disciples. It was a powerful moment for them, not just another tick-tock of the clock. It was an aha moment for them that led them to change careers, to change course, to follow a new path in life and follow Jesus. The kairos time and light that are referenced in this morning's passages have a lot in common. They are a powerful inbreaking of God's grace into our lives, a grace that heals and unites communities that are divided by war and hate and historical divisions, as in the Isaiah verses, and divided in the present by differences of ideology and politics, as in Jesus' day. In these verses, we are reminded that it is to a broken and divided world that God shines the light of hope and healing and love. One of my favorite writers is Robert Fulghum, who wrote All I Ever Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. In his book, It Was on Fire When I Lay Down on It. He always has fun titles for his books, too. He speaks about a man named Alexander Papaderos, and I want to read a section of his story for you. He writes, near the village of Gonia on a rocky bay of the island of Crete sits a Greek Orthodox monastery. Alongside it, on land donated by the monastery, is an institute dedicated to human understanding and peace, and especially to rapprochement between Germans and Cretans, an improbable task given the bitter residue of wartime. The site is important because it overlooks the small airstrip at Melame, where Nazi paratroopers invaded Crete and were attacked by peasants wielding kitchen knives and hay scythes. The retribution was terrible. The populations of whole villages were lined up and shot for assaulting Hitler's troops. High above the institute is a cemetery with a single cross marking the mass grave of Cretan partisans. And across the bay on yet another hill is the regimented burial ground of the Nazi paratroopers. The memorials are so placed that all might see and never forget. Hate was the only weapon the Cretans had at the end, and it was a weapon many vowed never to give up. Never, ever. Against this heavy curtain of history in this place where the stone of hatred is hard and thick, the existence of an institute devoted to healing the wounds of war is a fragile paradox. How has it come to be here? The answer is a man, Alexander Papaderos. A doctor of philosophy, teacher, politician, resident of Athens, but a son of this soil at war's end, he came to believe that the Germans and the Cretans had much to give one another, much to learn from one another. They had an example to set. For if they could forgive each other and construct a creative relationship, then any people could. To make the lovely story short, Papaderos succeeded. The institute became a reality, a conference ground on the site of horror, and it was, in fact, a source of productive interaction between the two countries. Books have been written on the dreams that were realized by what people gave to people in this place. By the time I came to the institute for a summer session, Papaderos had become a living legend. One look at him and you saw his strength and intensity and energy. physical power, courage, intelligence, passion, and vivacity radiated from this person. At the last session, on the last morning of a two-week seminar on Greek culture led by intellectuals and experts in their fields, we were recruited by Papaderos from across Greece. Papaderos rose from his chair at the back of the room and walked to the front, where he stood in the bright Greek sunlight of an open window and looked out. We followed his gaze to the bay, to the iron cross marking the German cemetery. He turned and made a ritual gesture. Are there any questions? Quiet quilted the room. These 2 weeks had generated enough questions for a lifetime, but for now, there was only silence. No questions? Papaderos swept the room with his eyes. So I asked, Dr. Papaderos, what is the meaning of life? Laughter followed and people stirred to go. But Papaderos held up his hand and stilled the room and looked at me for a long time, asking with his eyes if I was serious. And seeing from my eyes that I was, I will answer your question. Taking his wallet out of his hip pocket, he fished into a leather billfold and brought out a very small round mirror about the size of a quarter. And what he said went like this. When I was a small child during the war, we were very poor. We lived in a remote village. One day on the road, I found the broken pieces of a mirror. A German motorcycle had been wrecked in that place. I tried to find all the pieces to put them together, but it was not possible, so I kept only the largest piece, this one. And by scratching it on a stone, I made it round. I began to play with it as a toy and became fascinated by the fact that I could reflect light into dark places where the sun would never shine, in deep holes and crevices and dark closets. It became a game for me to get the light into the most inaccessible places I could find. I kept the little mirror, and as I went about my growing up, I would take it out in idle moments and continue the challenge of the game. As I became a man, I grew to understand that this was not just a child's game, but a metaphor for what I might do with my life. I came to understand that I am not the light or the source of light, but light, truth, understanding, knowledge is there, and it will only shine in many dark places if I reflect it. I am a fragment of a mirror whose whole design and shape I do not know. Nevertheless, with what I have, I can reflect light into the dark places of this world, into the black places in the hearts of men and women, and change some things in some people. Perhaps others may see and do likewise. This is what I am about. This is the meaning of my life. And then he took his small mirror and, holding it carefully, caught the bright rays of daylight streaming through the window and reflected them onto my face and into my hands, folded on the desk. Much of what I experienced in the way of information about Greek culture and history that summer is gone from memory. But in the wallet of my mind, I carry a small round mirror still. Orlando, Baton Rouge, Minnesota, Dallas, Nice, Istanbul, Pittsfield. This is Kairos time, God's time. We are called to be sources of help and hope, the hands and feet of compassion, the voices of justice and truth. This is God's time and our time, not time to build walls, but time to tear them down, the walls of racism and homophobia and xenophobia. To such a time as this, God has called us forth to shine light into the darkest of places and to be the bearers of God's good news for the world. Amen.